Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the first session of the final day of EDUCAUSE. You're here for Building Bridges with Moodle, Connecting an Institution. Please don't forget to fill out your survey online at the end of the session so these people can get your feedback. We have with us Martin Dahlberg, who is the Senior Coordinator for Educational Technology Services, Donna Petherbridge, who's the Associate Vice Provost for Instructional Support Services in Distance Education and Learning Technology Applications. We have Greg Robinson, who's the Director of Information and Instructional Technology for the College of Natural Resources, and Alan Schuler, who's the Director of Academic and Administrative Technology, the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, and Bethany Smith, the Assistant Director of Learning Technologies at the College of Education, all at North Carolina State University. Please welcome them.
Good morning. I know it's early. We really appreciate everybody coming out to our session this morning, Friday morning, the last day, because we can imagine you're a little bit tired this morning, either from the time zone change, the intensity of the conference, or way too much partying last night. I probably should not put that on recording, but there, it's out there. It's good to see you this early in the morning again. And my name is Donna Petherbridge, and I'm with Distance Education Learning Technologies at NC State. To try to do a mental map in your head of how that works, think of me as representing the centralized learning technology organization at our institution. And to tell you a little bit about NC State University, just to set the context, we're a Research One land-grant university in North Carolina. We have about 34,000 students. We have 10 colleges, lots of different programs, lots of things going on. So it's, we've got quite a distributed model of support and IT as well. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about where we're going today. We're going to give you a brief history of why we're using what we're using as far as the learning management system goes. But that's not the important part. I think the important part that we're going to spend most of the time on, and hopefully what you came here to hear about, is the governance structure for our learning management system. And we want to talk to you about how it actually works, give you some implementation examples, and to do some reflections on that model. So a little bit about our history. We've been using learning management systems in one form or the other since about 1996-97 when we created our own learning management system called Wolfware. Well, we're the Wolf Pack, and everything in NC State has to be Wolf something, so we had Wolfware. And mainly Wolfware was and is course file storage types of things and media delivery and class mailing lists. It's still very heavily used for those things. In about 1999, we bought a commercial product at the time. It was called WebCT. As you know, WebCT is no longer around with us, and it was bought out by Blackboard. But since then, we've gone through iterations of WebCT from Campus Edition to Vista, which we upgraded to or went to in 2005. And we've had about, I want to say, 3,000 to 4,000 sections a year using the learning management system. So a lot of heavy usage. Well, we had some things happen, obviously. We were told that WebCT Vista or Blackboard Vista was no longer going to be a supported product. And we also were looking at our own internal system, Wolfware, and thinking, well, we've got an aging code base here, and we've got some things that really need to be worked on. So it's time to look for another LMS. And also, it's 10 years later. So it's really, I really say with learning management systems, you're evaluating and rethinking every 5 years or so anyway, and we'd already upgraded different things when we had the WebCT product, so it's time to look again. Well, there's momentum already on campus and in the UNC system schools. At the time that we were looking, in about 2006-2007, there was a report that came out from the UNC system, the President's Advisory Council on Efficiency and Effectiveness, the PACE report. And this report asked the UNC institutions to consider open source when possible. So there was sort of the driver there in a report. And also, some of the other UNC system schools were already using or looking at open source at the time. And then at our own campus, there were pockets of usage of open source, specifically Moodle. Our College of Education had been using it for quite some time to do student portfolios and some other things that they did. And also, we had pockets of extension and non-credit that were using Moodle as well. So we had sort of a group of people already looking at it and using it. So as far as why we started looking at that particular open source, it was sort of already around, and it fit our campus development efforts, our architecture, pretty well. So that led us to a collaborative pilot. That's what you do, of course, when you you might fail, so but you want to try it out, so you just have a pilot. And we had a collaborative pilot. Well, luckily for me in the kind of central learning technology organization, I was able to reach out to my peers in the colleges because they had something I did not have at the time, which was a resource that could help with the pilot, because here I am trying to make sure the enterprise system was running and having a lot of trouble kind of keeping that going on. And Alan, who will be talking after me, had a human resource people that could help out with this. So we provided some hardware. He provided some support. We got sort of a more university collaborative pilot started. And then other colleagues joined on board. The members of this panel actually joined on. And we had a pilot team that met every month to discuss how Moodle was going to get people involved. We got in other colleges involved, not necessarily coming to meet with the team, but we reached out to all faculty across the institution and had courses running in Moodle from lots of different places, like the College of Vet Med and Textiles. A lot of other folks came on board. We did an extensive assessment, student assessment, faculty assessment. All of that is public and online. We'll give you the website at the end of the presentation so you can go look at all our reports and our process and everything. So you'll have that later if you're interested. But to me, that's not the interesting part, and this is where I think our presentation really kicks off. To me, it was about the collaboration piece. And I think that what we learned is that by doing this particular pilot the way that we did it, we had a model for collaboration in moving forward, that we learned that the enterprise working alone is not going to make the best decision and maybe use the resources most effectively. But if you can work together, you can do better. So we use this as an opportunity to change the culture, which is really neat. And so now I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Alan, who's right there, who's going to talk about the change in the culture.
That's not really me. I wish. I'm going to give you the rest of the story here. We have always been a very traditional campus in a lot of ways. We've got the top-down part, which tends to be the central IT folks who say you can have anything you want as long as it's what we want to give you. And we've always had the top, the bottom-up part, the little pockets of innovators, people who said, can we do this? Can we do that? And those two camps often never really met. They ignored each other. Sometimes they collided. But there was never any way to bring everybody together. Well, several years ago, the college directors started working on this and said, well, no, we really need to begin the conversation. So over a very slow period of time, through a number of mundane issues, we started a more collaborative process. And what we learned from that is that the key, there's always going to be technological innovation. There's always smart guys out there who want to do something new, who figure out a better way to do something. And what makes it work or not work is the governance that, of the environment in which they live. And that's where we typically fail, because those people get sucked up in the wrong way. They get the rules placed on them. They're ignored. Or they just go off and do their own thing. So we looked at this and said, well, let's do it the other way, and let's see if we can do our own thing. So the pilot really started with, it was partly rebellious and it was partly collaborative from the very beginning, because it's like, can we do this? We don't care. Let's see, for the first time, let's take a product that we think is a pretty good product, and let's look at it and let's just play with it and come up with every kind of user need, every kind of want that we can see, and see if we can break it, see if it will do what we want it to do. And there's nothing that says in the end we have to be right or we have to be wrong. We just want to play with it. So we're just going to do our own thing, which is the whole point of this. Well, that worked out pretty well, because Delta had the resources that we needed. Education had people who actually had a whole lot more experience with this than anybody else. We had other colleges who wanted to play. So we started with this, and it turned out to be, we were a pretty collegial group, so we actually got along pretty well and were talking. Oops, went too far. Sorry. But always lurking around the corner is the man. And we were ever mindful of this, because we were just beginning to enter what we've all experienced in multiple years of severe budget constraint. We also had a new CIO coming, the first CIO we'd ever had on campus coming, and we didn't know what he was going to do except that he'd already said he wanted to change governance. Turned out that he was thinking kind of like we were, so that was a good thing. But the best way to keep people from coming in and taking over what you're trying to do and do it the what you think is the wrong way is to co-opt them. And so we did a kind of 60s version of co-opting with people who learned a few things over the last 40 years or so. And so we put all this together, and the pilot actually worked. So we were never really worried about the technology of it. Again, if you've got smart people, and it doesn't matter what technology you're using, you can usually make it work, or you can determine why it won't work and be articulate about that. But again, our focus was, if that worked, our focus was on the governance and how are we going to be able to sustain that. And so we thought about it and said, oh, well, we better come up with a model that we think will work. So we came up with basically a federal collaborative sort of model in which you had the ability for the top-down folks to function in the ways that they needed to function, where rapid decisions needed to be made because somebody had granted them the authority and the ability to do that. But unlike before, the service provider wasn't holding all the cards. They just had votes. And everybody else who was playing, which turned out to be everybody else on campus right now who's doing credit courses, everybody else had a vote in the structure, which we will go into in some greater detail. And that's not always a pretty process. We do argue a lot, and we have impatience about wanting to get stuff done faster rather than slower, and the bureaucracy does raise its ugly little head every now and then. But what we found is that we now have an appropriate and workable forum to get all this stuff out so that we have the top-down stuff that works. We have very open and clear channels for the users, whoever they are, individual faculty members, administrators, whatever, to get their requests and needs articulated and in the system and dealt with in an orderly fashion. And we've eliminated, I think we've eliminated the real impediments to continued progress, and that is perpetual turf war and all the rest. We just kind of said, we're not going to do this. This is all our turf. So we kind of came up with this ultimate agreement that we would, in fact, live with peace, love, and understanding. And so I will turn this now to Marty Dahlberg, who's going to tell you more about how this actually works.
All right. Well, I'm Marty Dahlberg. I'm the coordinator for learning management systems for distance education and learning technology applications. So like Donna, I am part of the MAN. What I'd like to talk to you about first is just take a step backwards and say, what is an LMS? Now, I've looked at various articles. I've even heard that the LMS is dead, and I think that people describe learning management systems in different ways. For us, we are trying to set up what we consider to be a best-of-breed collection of tools, not just a content management and delivery system, but a best-of-breed of tools to allow the faculty to deliver their courses as they need to. So this would include things like, we have Moodle, we have Blackboard Vista, which is going away soon, we have Illuminate, we have a syllabus builder tool, a variety, a collection of things, and we, without looking at whether they're open source or proprietary, we try to keep an independent view, evaluate new tools as they come up, and aggregate these things and try to integrate them into that learning management system. So, we've created a model of governance, and before I start running you through this huge, intricate flow chart with 15 different arrows and call-outs, we tried to create a model that would reflect certain priorities, that being to solicit information from a broad and distributed user base, to be able to respond effectively to ongoing evolution of user needs, and to achieve an active means of collaboration within the governance. And I think one of the important things to consider is that you really have to look at the culture of the institution. There are some schools that, you know, IT may run this discussion, and they may just simply provide a tool to the faculty to use. That certainly wouldn't work well at our institution. The faculty and the departments, and particularly the colleges, have a great deal of autonomy and ability to do what they want to. So it's important to pull people into the model. So, here's our model. I think we're done here. What more do I need to say? We have a beautiful flow chart with nice colors, arrows, things like that. But to give you a quick overview, we report to the Vice Provost of Delta, who Delta is responsible, is charged with delivering the LMS to the university. And while he sits there at the close to the top of the chart, just below the provost, the primary responsibility for this does reside with the LMS steering committee, which is kind of in the middle. And we'll take a better look at the center of that chart in just a minute. But we do take a lot of input from a variety of different sources, including Teaching and Learning Technology Roundtable, college LMS representatives, DE coordinators, distance education coordinators, the campus IT directors. We work closely with the library and the Office of Information Technology, Office of Faculty Development, and we do our very, very best to get faculty and student input. But we find that that's usually one of the things that I always find it's hard to get faculty input, or particularly student input, until after the fact. You know, when they have a problem with it. And then, you know, we do get some feedback and try to coordinate and work with the Office of Information Technology. So here's the good part. And this is the guts of the model. Let's ignore Delta Tactical for a second, that blue one on the side there. We have three committees that work somewhat independently, but all report to the steering committee. College Needs and Policy Recommendations, who is responsible. We have a representative from each college that's responsible for representing their college's needs and helping us to form policy on things like feature requests, usage of particular tools, who's allowed to use them, so on and so forth. One of the places where many things originate is the Best Practices and Support Group, and they really represent the teachers, the pedagogical issues, student needs, things like how are we going to support this, what sort of administrative access should we give to people, to attempt to make things work as well as possible. They're really the faculty advocates and the student advocates. We have a technical committee that's responsible for making sure that the wild ideas in the other committees are actually doable, or to look at, make recommendations about, you know, what sort of hardware configurations or backup policy, things like that. And then finally, off on the side, we have Delta Tactical Committee, which is really just an implementation committee. And there, it's an primarily internal committee that's responsible for staging things like upgrades, monitoring issues, problems like that, and then reporting those back to the other committees. Now, all of these committees have at least half external membership, some more so than others. So some of them are maybe half Delta employees, people who are actually working with the LMS, and half external representatives, and others are, for example, College Needs and Policy. Delta is represented by one person, okay, and the rest of it is external. And then finally, we have a steering committee. And I preside over the steering, I'm the chair of the steering committee, and we coordinate the issues between those committees and make a final recommendation. So I think my time is up. I could talk about this for probably another hour or two, because this is like my life. But all of these subcommittees are co-chaired by an internal Delta person and an external representative. So we work very, very hard to make sure that the outside community is representative. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bethany Smith.
So now that the man has finished,
I will be talking about how the model really works. My name is Bethany Smith. I am the Assistant Director for Learning Technologies at the College of Education. And we're going to talk about some of the implementation things that we've done to make our LMS work. And when it comes to implementation examples, one of the things that we want to make sure that we talk about is that, yes, we are talking a lot about Moodle, but we are talking about some of the other tools that fit inside of our LMS. However, with Moodle, there are lots of options. And because of those lots of options, we really had to create a framework for which we can establish which options are best for us and for our university. So we actually created an SOP on SOPs. So we created a standard operating procedure on standard operating procedures. And what that let us do is, one, part of this, and I think part of the goal of everything that we've done, is all about transparency. And we want all of our constituents to understand what it is that we're doing, why that we're doing it. And what we needed to do with our SOP on SOPs is say, okay, when it comes to, and what I'll talk about is like feature requests, what is the procedure that has to go through in order for it to be vetted? So the first big one was the theme SOP. One of the nice things about Moodle is that there are lots of themes. One of the bad things about Moodle is that there are lots of themes, and everybody wants their own theme, and everybody wants a customized theme. So how do you choose which themes do you have? How do you choose which themes fit the branding of your university? And how do you do that without having a really, really, really long list in Moodle for which to choose from? And so we came up with, and this came through my committee, I'm the co-chair of the Best Practices Committee, I'm trying to figure out, okay, so what's good from a usability standpoint, what's good from a technical standpoint, and we were able to come up with some standard themes that we use from Moodle, some NCSU branded themes, and then we actually came up with some really cool themes that allow you just to replace the banner.jpg file in Moodle, so every single person can have a custom Moodle theme if they want to. So we were able to use that, and now when we get requests for, well, can you create a specialized theme for my department and my college, we can say that doesn't fit in our standard operating procedures in terms of the way we do theme acquisition, but, you know, we'll take it into consideration, see if it fits what we need to do, and see what kind of changes we need to be made. And I think that's the heart of what we're trying to do, is we want faculty to make sure that they understood that they are being heard and that we are taking things into account and that there's a large group of us taking those things into account. The next one was the feature request policy. One of the things I think we found in our pilot was that people wanted to request everything. They found a cool website that used a theme or an add-in or a plug-in, and they all wanted to try it out. And we realized that when we went into our real implementation of Moodle that we just couldn't add everything. I think there's, 15 wiki add-ons that you can choose from. How do we choose the best one for us and for our college? Our feature request policy, we allow anybody to kind of request. We kind of wanted to use the Moodle bug tracker feature, the way that people track bugs in Moodle. We wanted people to be able to track feature requests in the same way. So this is kind of a little bit of what we've done, where the feature request comes in, how does it go through the committees? And this is an example of our procedure. So going through, and what I really like is that it goes through best practices first. So it says, is this something we really should be doing? And then if it's something that we should be doing, we go to the college needs and policy, and then it goes into technical to figure out if this is something we can actually pull off. And one thing Marty didn't mention is a lot of us that are on committees are cross-committee members. So somebody in best practices will also have a role on the technical committee, so they're able to inform why this is important for best practices for technical to be able to work on it and make it work. But one of the things that we are working on is right now it's just a spreadsheet that you go to see all the feature requests and where it's being looked at. And I think the last time there was, 45, 60?
67.
We have 67 feature requests right now. So we're hoping to get a better system to be able to see that. But at least people know that it hasn't been lost somewhere. It's gone. It'll be looked at. And it will be added if we deem it good for the college or the university. And just so you know, we're not just all about Moodle. We also had to create an SOP on Illuminate. And we really needed to create one about who could create accounts, who could use those accounts, what could you use those accounts for. And that was really a big policy decision. But we wanted everybody to know why we were making those decisions and why it was good. Because one of the great things that we have with Illuminate is that anybody can join an Illuminate session. They don't have to be part of our university to join a session. So what sort of constraints does that and what sort of freedom does that have for our constituencies? And so I'm going to go ahead and turn this on to Greg Robinson, who's going to talk about the reflections of the whole process.
I'm Greg Robinson. I don't have any bubble sheets or any diagrams, but I would like to provide some comments, some highlights, hitting some footnotes. Just want to illustrate some things that we've had the four panelists provide information on. So what I'd like to do is provide some reflections and succinctly express what we've talked about so far. First of all, what's been effective? Well, another way to define our role of governance, our position on governance, is to develop a consensus-building approach to address ongoing needs through clearly defined channels. And by that, I'd like to say that it heavily relies on two objectives. The first is communication and transparency. Marty and Bethany described the committees we used, and in case you can't remember all the bubbles, primarily we have a technical group that reconciles technical issues. We have a best practice and support. And thirdly, we have a college needs and policies. And in different ways, each of these helps bridge the gap between centralized services, the men and women of Central ID, as well as the distributed needs of stakeholders. Bethany, for example, is with the College of Education. Alan, with the College of Agriculture and Life Science. I'm one of those as well, College of Natural Resources. So we have 10 colleges, the libraries, extension groups, as all stakeholders. And to summarize, having those three groups try to bridge the needs of the distributed groups with the resources available from Central IT Group. Secondly, broad representation. This reflects how we like to solicit and address both the feedback and concerns brought by multiple points of view. Challenges. Well, the first challenge is a little bit obvious, probably, insofar that we have a lot of bureaucracy. Consensus building across the entire campus isn't necessarily agile, nor is it necessarily speedy. But that's a trade-off we're willing to make. Secondly, compromise. As you probably expect, consensus building requires a lot of give and take. So decisions require the recognition of limited resources as well as the competing priorities. How many feature requests? 67? 67. Competing priorities. So it's our job as committee members and shared governance to evaluate these and come to a compromise on what our priorities are among the stakeholders. It's much easier for Central IT to say, okay, my way or the highway. It's much easier for the colleges and distributed unions to say, well, I'm going to take my resources, I'm going to take my hardware, and I'm going to take my developer cycles, and I'm going to take all my toys and go home. But instead, we're dedicated to working together to gain efficiencies instead of pursuing autonomy. Avoiding the silo. As we mentioned before, our goal is to leverage resources with a shared vision. We don't want to have 50 different Moodle instances on campus. Instead, what we'd like to do, what we'd like to do is position ourselves to approach similar problems with a unified strategy. In many ways, the LMS culture on our campus represents the open source model. In that capacity, we seek to tap resources and encourage development beneath the enterprise level. We want to choose the tools that best serve the campus needs for the campus as a whole, as well as work together to implement solutions. Uh, Responsiveness to user needs. Don't you love that picture? Bethany came up with that one. I realize that time is running short, and we'd like to accommodate a lot of questions, so I'll kind of move more quickly through these slides. Am I fine? That's my wife tells me too. Okay. So we want to accommodate a broad base of stakeholders, and by that, we mentioned the policy committee. The policy committee, as Alan illustrated, contains IT representatives from across the university. Again, the 10 colleges, libraries, and extension units. And secondly, we have faculty representation on the steering committee to provide input, things that we might not have considered from an IT perspective. Striking a balance. Let me emphasize this in two respects. The first is within the committee structure, the technical, the best practice, the college needs and policy. We have to constantly mind the gap between these and ensure that the agenda of one doesn't hijack the balance between the others. Secondly, overarching approach. By that, I mean strike a balance between the top-down and the grassroots efforts. The central IT agency must ensure a stable, secure, and scalable model with limited resources. But at the same time, stakeholders and customers must feel that their needs are being recognized, acknowledged, and swiftly accommodated whenever possible. Control our own destiny. The dynamics and philosophy of governance might not suit your institution. Your mileage may vary. However, for us, the collaborative model has proven effective. We've made significant progress efficiently accommodating stakeholder needs with limited resources. Secondly, we've achieved a transparent dialogue and solicited ongoing feedback from stakeholders. The questions arise now, many questions. I have four to mention right now. How can we, one, streamline our development and implementation efforts? Secondly, how can we improve our organizational agility? Third, how can we hasten our decision-making? And fourth, how can we address the unforeseen advanced complexities as our LMS evolves? So at this point, you've heard from five panelists, and what I'd like to do is have Marty come up and host and accommodate questions.
Thanks, Greg. So I'd like to turn it over to Bill. Okay, so the question was, how often do the committees meet? And if I had not bloviated too much on my slides, I would have included that. And that is, the chairs of the committees set up the meeting times, and each of them meet approximately once a month. And we try very, very hard to respect people's time. So if, for example, we don't have a full agenda, we'll usually cancel a meeting and move it to the next time.
Can I add to that real quick?
Please.
One thing I will say is that we have decided to make some decisions online. So all of us have our own Moodle course for our committee where all the minutes are stored. And so there are times when, say, a feature request or theme, things have come up, we voted online to help speed that process.
We have an SOP on online voting procedures for non-face-to-face meetings as well.
Okay. I believe you had a question. Okay, the makeup of the steering committee, I unfortunately do not have a list of all the people in my mind, but it is myself as the chair, each of the co-chairs of the three committees, so that's six people are members, and then we have, and I'm going to forget somebody, members from the library, from IT, we have a heckler up front here who's on there, another associate vice provost, we have too many of those. Faculty, three faculty representatives, somebody from the, college directors, extension,
DE coordinators,
and Delta Advisory Committee. I think that probably covers it.
We do have our chart online that outlines all the membership, and you can link to the documentation. If it's not off of the Wolfware website, we're going to have all that up by the end of the – well, by the time we get back and get this organized.
Okay. Sir, in the back. That's you. Yes.
You mentioned that you wanted to explore open source LMSs. Did you have an assessment model for comparing Moodle to other open source options?
Donna?
Yes, and you all feel free to jump in. You can find that model online. We had rubrics. I sent around a rubric to my to other UNC System schools where we compared features at a broad level. Do they have certain components? And down to a how does the discussion board compare? But I guess at the same time, I would encourage you, if you're doing an assessment, don't get too lost in the weeds there because they're so similar. And that's what you find. I mean, for us, it was about we found a lot of good things across many different learning management systems, and then we also had to look at momentum and skill set of people that would actually be running the system. Does anybody want to add to that?
Since I was the one of the instigators of this, the rebel in this whole thing, I was looking at Moodle from the get-go for a couple three reasons. One, we were hearing from our faculty that the current the vendor provided LMS was too hard to use for a lot of things. It was too complicated. Learning curve was too long. Is this on? Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So we were looking for something that we thought would be simple, was going to be much more resource friendly. That was one thing. That it was going to be easier for faculty to use, just as easy, if not easier, for students to use. And I just frankly looked around the world and I said, good Lord, if the Open University is using this, they've been in the business a whole lot longer than any of us have. This might be something that there's some insight there. We ought to take a good look at this. And then, of course, we were very interested in open source. The second piece, which was very attractive to us technically, at least to me, was that since Moodle is based entirely on LAMP architecture, we are very much a LAMP campus. I mean, you can't walk down the street without running into a LAMP developer. And so that meant that we had a whole lot of resources, and these are much cheaper resources that you can use for a lot of things. And we understand, at least the people who are doing this, understand databases and all the rest. So, you know, it just kind of fit with how we were thinking anyway. And so there was a predisposition there to say, let's take the hardest look at Moodle and make it prove us wrong, rather than to start and say, we're going to pick from scratch.
Okay, and just for those of you who don't know, LAMP is Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. So I had a question somewhere in the middle.
How long has this structure been in place, and has it leaked into the IT organization?
How long has this structure been in place, and has it leaked into the IT organization?
We're working on that every day.
Yeah, why don't you, please?
I'll start by saying I think we started putting together the actual flowchart model stuff about 2007. It went through many conversations and iterations and
it became known as
heated
the cloud
discussions. So it's been going on for some time as far as it took us a long time to talk through who should be there. I think the biggest piece for us was really thinking about separating policy from technical. I think sometimes we tend to drive decisions by technical first. But ultimately the technical folks will tell you it has to work. So you have to have both, but you don't want to have one of these particular areas always be just the sole driver. So it took us a while to do that. I personally believe that it is going over into the campus infrastructure because right now our university is looking at overall IT governance, and the people that are getting tapped to lead those committees and participate in those discussions are here and some of our other colleagues in the audience who've been involved with this. So I'm chairing the Academic Technology Task Force for the Office of Information Technology to see how part of this piece can come in and work with that piece. So it's definitely having an impact. You all want to add to that?
When did we start production?
Production Moodle?
Spring.
Yes, so we started 18 months ago, maybe.
Yeah. So we've been actually in production mode with the evolving. I mean, we had pretty much the governance in place and the production mode for which was optional for faculty to start. We just kind of said, hey, y'all come if you feel like it. And they came a whole lot faster than we anticipated. And what's really interesting is that most of them did it themselves. They did not go to the help desk. The ones that had very esoteric stuff needed some help with conversion. But most faculty just picked their stuff up and moved it over there. And we're seeing a lot more new faculty in the LMS than we ever did before.
And considering that we have a fully supported migration package that you can sign up for, where we're partnering with a vendor to help with that because they can run stuff from through a script to make it Moodle ready from the thing that we're on right now. That full package, a lot of people didn't sign up for it. They're just doing it themselves. I think we have about 400 courses still to migrate, and we have our migration ends next summer when Blackboard Vista is the maintenance ends for our campus.
Sir? Let me get this straight. You actually had faculty that were interested in moving their own material?
Yeah. Almost all of them.
Can I get a list of them so I can...
And I think what was really gratifying was when I would meet with the faculty, they would say, you know, I think I want to think about my course differently in terms of how I would teach it differently in Moodle. And I think that's the best compliment you can ever get in terms of the fact that they were really looking at how do I teach effectively and how do I teach effectively in a different system and changing their pedagogical strategies.
A follow-on. How many courses have you been migrating now? Is it 5,000, 6,000 courses-ish?
Well, we've... So the question was, how many courses have we migrated so far? And that's a little hard to answer because sometimes it's very hard to keep statistics on this because people sometimes will use two LMSs for their course as they're moving things over. So I know that the revamp project, where we're actually helping the faculty move, has done about 400, and they have another 300 or 400 in the queue to be done by the end of the spring. In addition, we have currently have live about 2,500 courses this semester in Moodle, and so you know some people have moved previous semesters or courses that are only offered once a year. So it's a little hard to give you an exact number. I think you had a question?
My question was a follow-on. What's the breadth and depth of usage at your campus, both of Vista before this and now of Moodle? And is it primarily hybrid or fully online? What's the proportion?
Okay, what's the breadth and depth of Vista and Moodle usage? And is it primarily hybrid, distance, or some combination thereof? And the first answer I would give you is it's everything. All of the above. Just to give you an idea, we've gone from approximately 2,000 sections in Vista, 2,500 sections in our home Wolfware, and I got to do the little wolf whenever I say that, and 400 sections in Moodle to Moodle having about 2,500 sections, Wolfware having about 2,000, and Vista we're down to 400 and I think 50. So it's been a pretty dramatic drop, and most of that has been faculty initiated.
I think the other statistic that we can give out is about 90% of all students at NC State University have at least one course in a learning management system. So we're not talking about only distance education courses, though the majority of our distance education courses do use a learning management system as a component of their delivery.
What about the end user satisfaction? Who cares about the end user? No.
That's the man. Talk to the college.
So I'm the IT director for an individual college. I have a heavy LMS user. Well, he's kind of thin, but a very strong LMS user. He said, Moodle is as easy as falling off a log. And so that's a quote we'd like to hear. But basically, also to emphasize, our role here is to champion what we've also done, however, at the same time, provide adequate information to you about governance. So if I could also ask if there's any questions of that nature based on what we've said so far.
Well, let me just add one other thing to that. And that was, I can recall shortly after I started, I've been doing this for a year and a half, and shortly after I started, I was called to what I like to call the grill, which is where the chancellor meets with the student leaders. And they get to ask questions, and whichever representatives are responsible for whatever atrocity have to appear and defend themselves. And so I was called to task for, why do we have three LMSs? We have no idea where our classes are, what's going on. And so, and it was a very valid complaint. And what I was able to glean from the student feedback is they didn't so much care where it was as long as it worked, as long as it worked properly and they could find it. So what I found in my discussions with students about Moodle is they don't have any problem using it. They didn't really have a problem using Vista either, except when it wasn't working. You know, or if a faculty member doesn't set up a course properly or doesn't have the homework assignment open properly. So the students are happy with it. They have no problem. We did do a satisfaction survey, and those results are available online.
Now, here's another signal to how the students feel about that. We are now having to deal with the with some fairly significant policy issues and how we and functional issues, because the students have now discovered Moodle and say, hey, we want to use this. So our student senators came to us and said, we want to start communicating with our constituents a whole lot better, so can you give us a Moodle site? Give us a project where we can do whatever we need to do. And we said, yeah, okay, we'll work on that. We've got another thing where we have a required reading for entering freshmen every summer, and now we're setting up multi-year projects for that whole cohort. That's really not a course, it's optional, but the provost is providing some money for projects and whatnot tied to their reading, and we're looking at, can we put all that in Moodle, and how are we going to do that? So the students are now getting excited about using it as their own tool, which creates a whole other set of issues, but that's very promising. So what I would like to say, I'd like to leave you with the idea that what this has done is not just the IT governance part and us coming to kumbaya from time to time, but it's opened the entire process. It's opened the pedagogical process. We're now dealing with much more positive stuff rather than the negative stuff with things that are broken and why can't I get this and all. You know, so we really feel like there's been a sea change in the technology now becoming perceived as an enabler rather than an impediment to a more effective learning process.
Okay. We're going to have time for just one more question, but let me just stress something. If you go to wolfware.ncsu.edu and you scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page, you'll find a few links all the way down in the footer where we will have a ton of resources for you. And I want to stress, we really want to share this stuff, our policies, everything, SOPs are online. So let's take one more question. Sir? Was ePortfolio part of our transition, and did that present any challenge?
Well, we technically don't have any, I guess, add-on like Mahara to Moodle for ePortfolios. I currently run a separate Moodle that we use as a portfolio system for our students, where they're the teachers of their own courses. But that had a lot more to do with the fact that in the College of Education, I want our students graduating knowing how to use an LMS. So it served a dual purpose for us. I know that Greg is interested in ePortfolio options and exploring some of those things, but we do not have it integrated in part of our LMS.
Yet. Okay.
I looked at Mahara probably about 3 years ago when it was still before version one, and it wasn't really what we needed. I think it's due another look.
All right. Well, with that, I'd like to thank you very much for coming, and we'll hang out for questions in the back. And so to give the next speakers a chance, we'll hang out in the back of the room or just outside to answer any questions. And thanks for coming.